How do you know when it's time to stop trying in a relationship? I get asked this question so much. How do you know if you're giving up too soon? How do you know if a relationship still deserves more effort? How do you know if you'll regret leaving? Well, these questions show up after you've already tried, after the conversations, the compromises, the therapy, the books, the listening to Abby, and the waiting. What makes this decision, I think, especially hard is that by the time you're asking it, you're often not just confused, you're likely doing something I call, and some others call, self-gaslighting. That's not a clinical diagnosis. It's a pattern I see all the time. It's when you talk yourself out of your own experience in order to avoid discomfort, loss, or a hard truth of some kind. So today you're going to learn why this decision feels so hard, even when you've been unhappy for a long time, what really psychological and biological forces are keeping you stuck, and how to assess what you actually need in a relationship so you can decide what to do next without panic and no self-blame and no regret. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. This topic today, you know, a lot of you have written in about this. This definitely came out of my One Love Collective, my online community on Substack. I have a few members who are struggling with this. So I thought, well, let's get some answers out there. So why this decision is so hard, even if you've been thinking about it for a long time? I think that's the place to start, right? Most people assume that indecision, you know, not being able to decide, means they don't know enough or haven't maybe thought enough about whatever, you know, the relationship or whatever it is that you're trying to decide where you're feeling stuck. And I have to tell you right now, that's almost never true. You get into analysis paralysis that way, which is probably where you are right now. What's usually happening is that there's a bunch of, I'm going to call them psychological forces at work. let's call them psychological forces. And they're pulling you in opposite directions at the same time. And you confuse effort with effectiveness. And that's really, I think, what I want to get clear about today so that you don't keep doing that. You likely stay stuck because you're equating trying harder with maybe doing the right thing. You know, effort can feel really virtuous. It's loyal. You know, you think of yourself as a loyal person. It feels like love. So at least with my clients, I have to tell you, you keep adjusting how you communicate. You work on your tone. You pick your battles. You try to be more patient, more understanding, more regulated. You read another book. Maybe you suggest another round of therapy of couples work to them, or, you know, maybe if it's like your mother you're having this issue with, or, you know, or like a family member you're trying to decide, or a friendship, you know, you're going at it over and over in different ways. You're certainly coming and talking to me a lot about it. Maybe I've tried this, maybe I should do this. And when nothing fundamentally changes, you assume the problem is that you still haven't tried enough, or that there's some, what I think is that you think there's some right way out there you're just missing. That's the perseverating. That's the thinking over and over and over about a topic. That's the coming back to it and not being able to let it go. But that's not the issue. Effort alone doesn't tell you whether a relationship is healthy or sustainable. If you're constantly exerting energy just to keep the relationship from kind of falling apart, or just to keep yourself from feeling miserable every second, that's not progress. I say with so much love, that's endurance. That's what that is. A relationship worth saving doesn't require you to, you know, chronically override yourself just to keep it functioning. And by the way, if you're in a relationship where you have children together, I am at the end going to talk about kids, but I want you to make these decisions, and this, you might disagree, but we're not deciding today. Let me just say that. What you're doing, again, you're assessing today. So I'll talk about kids at the very end, but for now, leave the kids to the side. And you might be thinking, well, I can't, Abby. That's a yes, you can. Yes, you can. I need you to make a healthy, you know, assessment here. That's what we're trying to do. So just for the length of the podcast today, this episode, just set it aside. How's that? That's all I ask. Okay. That's all I ask. And again, I'll say something at the end about if you have kids. Okay. So, what do I mean when I say that you override yourself? I just said you override yourself. What am I talking about? And to me, that means repeatedly ignoring or pushing down your own internal signals in order to preserve the relationship. Something doesn't feel right in your body, but you talk yourself out of it. You feel hurt, disappointed, you're uneasy, but you immediately minimize it. Your gut is giving you information and your brain rushes in to explain it away. That's what I see a lot of. And it often shows up, I think, most clearly after some really hard moments. You know, the argument happens, the boundary gets crossed, you feel dismissed, disrespected, you feel alone. But then the good times return. And when it's good, maybe it's really good, or at least it's fine. It's good enough. And again, maybe if you have kids, you're like, this is fine. You know, hey, you know, there's some connection, affection, there's laughter, and this great feeling of relief that you have, like, oh, okay, we're here. We're back on dry land. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, this is why I stay. And because those moments feel so grounding, you move past what didn't sit right before. You stop bringing it up. You probably stop asking yourself hard questions, or you tell yourself it wasn't that bad. These are the things I see the most. That's overriding yourself. You're not responding to the full picture of the relationship. You're responding to the emotional relief of the good moments and discounting the information that shows up during the hard ones. I'm saying this with so much love in my heart. I really, really am. I've had this conversation with probably at least hundreds of people over the years. At least it's probably in the thousands after 40 years, because this comes up so much. And over time, this creates confusion because the relationship feels amazing sometimes and painful sometimes, or it feels, you know, comfortable sometimes and painful sometimes. And instead of using the painful moments as data, as information you should be listening to, you treat those painful moments as noise that you should get over. And that's, to me, that's where the self-gaslighting begins. Okay? Yeah. So there are four main mistakes I see when it comes to making critical decisions in your relationship. These are the four I see the most. One is mistaking hope for progress. I love hope. Okay. I love hope. Hope is one of the strongest forces keeping people stuck though. Okay. You focus on what the relationship could be instead of what it actually is. You know, you're playing the good moments in your head over and over. You remember how it used to feel. You tell yourself that if one specific thing changed, everything would be better. You might think if they really understood how much this hurts me, things would shift, or once maybe a stressful season passes, we'll be okay again, even though we both know there's always more stressful seasons. And meanwhile, the same patterns keep repeating. Hope becomes a problem when it replaces evidence. I'm going to say that again. Hope becomes a problem when it replaces evidence. I know, just let it percolate. Progress shows up as consistent behavioral change over time, not potential, not promises, not occasional change where it doesn't, you know, stay again consistent and get better over time. It's not just changing. The change should keep deepening. Okay. So it's not, you know, just like, oh, I need to hear that I'm appreciated. Maybe that starts with your partner saying that they appreciate things. They start to point out, oh yeah, thank you for that. Or, I really appreciated that. Right. But then it goes away for a while. And then you remind them and they're like, oh yeah, of course. I really do appreciate you. And they do it again. That's not progress. Even if they keep saying they appreciate you every few months, or even if they remember on their own, because you should feel it shouldn't be like a thing they're ticking off on a list. You should feel that you're appreciated. I actually think you should feel it without the words, the way they look at you, things they do for you, ways they think about you first, right? I would love for you to feel appreciated with no one saying the words, thank you, or I appreciate you. Try that. Hope without movement, consistent movement, doesn't move a relationship forward. To me, it just delays the clarity. That's what I see. Problem two is you normalize what isn't working for you. Over time, a lot of people, what I see is that they quietly lower their expectations without even realizing it. You tell yourself, no relationship is perfect. Long-term relationships are supposed to be hard. You compare your situation maybe to worse ones. And then you use that comparison to invalidate your own experience. You compare this relationship to your last one. And you say, well, this is an improvement over that one. But that's like saying slightly moldy bread is better to eat than really moldy bread. Sure, it's better. But do you want to eat moldy bread at all? Really? Is this where we are? I have clients who do this a lot. They get in another relationship and it is better than the one previously. They keep comparing it to a previous relationship. I'm like, well, it's better, but it's still not great. And you were starting at a really low bar. So now we have a slightly higher bar that's still, to me, kind of low. So stop comparing. That's not okay either. You could have anything. There's billions of people on the planet. You could have something else. You might feel lonely, dismissed, or emotionally unsupported, and then immediately think that something like, well, at least they don't cheat, or at least they're a good parent, or other people have it worse. You know, there's a difference between accepting normal imperfections and dismissing chronic dissatisfaction. I know. I'm pausing for so that you can let my words sink in. Feeling anxious, unseen, or emotionally alone on a regular basis isn't a personality flaw. It is information, and you should be listening. Okay. And I want to write down, give me 1 second here. I want to write down something I want to make sure I say at the end. Give me a second. We're here. I'm here. 1 second. Okay. All right. Number three, the third reason, thank you for your patience. And I'm going to have a sip of my hot chocolate. I got hot chocolate today. I felt like it's pouring rain here the day that I'm recording this, and here in the Berkeley Bay area of California. And I got a hot chocolate because I felt like that, and I get to talk to you. I mean, what a cozy, wonderful, and I'm all cozy in my office. Life is good. Number three, the third reason. You're more afraid of being wrong than being unhappy. And this shows up especially, I think, in very thoughtful, self-aware people. Okay. This is one I only see in my clients who are very thoughtful and self-aware. You don't want to overreact. You don't want to hurt someone unnecessarily. You don't want to look back and think that you didn't try hard enough. So you keep reassessing instead of deciding. And again, you get into some analysis paralysis. You know, you think, well, what if I leave and I realize this was fixable? Or what if this is just a phase and I blow everything up? And that fear really keeps you in, again, that analysis mode. You revisit the same questions over and over and you don't move forward. You don't move forward. And so it's okay to be in that kind of thing for, you know, a week or a couple weeks, but months and months, years and years, we got a problem. Indecision often feels safer than choosing, but it really, it has a cost to you. It has a cost to both of you, I do want to say. You're hurting the other person too. But they're a grown up, so we're not going to worry about them right now. We're going to worry about you. They can take care of themselves. It has a cost to you. It keeps you in a relationship that already feels uncertain and draining. And not deciding, of course, is still a decision. All right. And the fourth thing I see is that you stay loyal to, the fourth mistake I see is you're staying loyal to a past version of the relationship. This, I see this all the time. History is powerful. Shared memories, inside jokes, milestones, their family, your family, everything you've been through together, all of that can keep you emotionally attached long after the relationship itself has changed. It's not the same anymore. You might find yourself thinking about how connected you once felt or how much you have survived together. And that history makes it harder to assess the relationship you're in now. You're not in that relationship anymore. You're not. You're in this one now. You're not staying for the present reality. You're staying for a memory. And that's a big problem. Okay. So let's talk about self-gaslighting. I haven't really used that term, I don't think, before on the podcast. And when I was researching for this one, I came across some other people talking about self-gaslighting. And I was like, whoa, what a great, I don't know how I haven't said those words before, but there you go. So I'm not owning, other people have said it before me, but I'm saying it myself kind of for the first time, I think, on the podcast. And so self-gaslighting, again, it's like how you talk yourself out of what you already know. You know, it's when you consistently dismiss, minimize, or really, I think, kind of reinterpret your own experience in order to reduce discomfort, in order to avoid a hard truth, I think. And it sounds like a lot of things. I'll tell you what I hear. I hear a lot. I hear, oh, I'm probably overreacting. They didn't mean it like that, or they didn't mean it. Other people have it worse. I'm so sick of that. Or I've had it worse before. Maybe I'm just bad at relationships. I've heard people say that. If I were more patient or more kind or whatever, this wouldn't bother me. You know, those kind of things. Self-gaslighting, I want to be clear, it's not a character flaw. It's a coping strategy. It's not a character flaw. It's a coping strategy. And something called cognitive dissonance plays a role here too. Let's talk about that. When your reality, cognitive dissonance, when your reality doesn't match what you hope for or what your brain looks or what you think, right? Your values, what you hope for, your brain looks for ways to reduce your discomfort. And that's when we start rationalizing things, right? So changing the story can feel easier than changing the situation.
I've always made every episode of this podcast with one idea in mind, to over-deliver. I want you to walk away thinking, I would have paid for that. I can't believe it's free. And in all the years I've done this show, as you know, I have never taken on a sponsor. But when Quince asked to be my very first, I said an enthusiastic yes, because Quince does exactly what I do. They over-deliver. Cashmere without cashmere prices, real washable silk, all the elevated stuff you and I love without the markup we all hate. And I'm talking 50 to 80% less than you can find anywhere else. And I'll just say it, I love an obvious bargain. I live just outside San Francisco, where the summers are more of a rumor than a season, so I wear their cashmere sweaters year-round. But there's way more than cashmere, of course. So make your summer wardrobe feel easier. Go to quince.com/RME for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/RME, which stands for Relationships Made Easy, for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/RME. The person who edited the episode you're listening to right now, I found him on Upwork 8 years ago, and he is still my guy. Same goes for the person who keeps my website from falling apart. Truly, I couldn't run my business without them, and they're the first place I go the second my plate feels too full. So when Upwork asked about sponsoring the show, it was a very easy yes. And that's true personally too, not just professionally. Upwork isn't only for entrepreneurs. A while back, I somehow agreed to run my kids' school auction. Yeah, why did I say yes to that? And I hired an assistant through Upwork who made the whole thing painless and barely cost me anything. So whether you're scaling a business or you're an overwhelmed parent staring down a school project, Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. It's free to sign up and posting a job is easy. So visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
I'm going to say that again. Changing the story can feel easier than changing the situation. And it's not like you realize you're changing the story. This is, again, how our brain, you know, our brain is always trying to protect us so much. And there's so much self-preservation going on. So that's why it's so important to get to your underlying beliefs that lead to you to be in certain kinds of relationships. And when we talk later, I have a really great download for today. And my Therapy to Go bundle is amazing, helping you get to all that. But we'll get to that at the end. Okay. So it's, again, changing the story can feel easier than changing the situation. Yeah, I'm going to keep saying that. But you end up with that feeling that something just isn't right, even as you keep ignoring it. And this is that unsettled feeling. This is the anxious feeling. This is the all that, right? You might overeat. You might drink too much or spend too much money. It probably comes out in different sort of ways. That's what happens a lot. Let me give you some examples of cognitive dissonance and how it shows up. It's things like, rationalizing a partner's infidelity is no big deal. I had that recently. It was really interesting. Downplaying your need for independence to fit like a controlling partner. I said that well. That's what I also had recently with a different client. She has a really controlling partner, and she was sort of downplaying what she really wants. Staying in a relationship despite, you know, repeated betrayals of some kind because you believe that, you know, they'll change. All of these examples, they're creating a clash between I love them and their actions are harmful to me. Again, maybe not harmful objectively to the outside world. People are all different. I have people in clients in open relationships and throuples, all kinds of things, which are really work for them. It works for them. But if that's not something that works for you, again, so it's not, you don't have to moralize or judge other people's behavior. And this is where you get into trouble because you decide like my client whose partner is so controlling, she gets so angry about how controlling he is. I'm like, yeah, but you stay. Like, he's allowed to be controlling. He can do whatever he wants. He's not hurting her, by the way. It's very, very subtle things, but he's pretty controlling. And I'm controlling. I'm not abusive, but I get controlling, you know? I mean, hey. So, but, you know, if Gary, my Gary doesn't like it, you know, he's a grown ass man. He can make choices around it, right? But again, I try to be self-aware about my controllingness, my control enthusiast nature, as you all know. But anyway, you know, but all I'm saying is like, so I kept saying to her, don't judge him. Bring it back to yourself. What are you comfortable with and not comfortable with? This isn't about that he's wrong and bad and he needs to change. This is about how are you doing in this relationship the way that it is, right? Okay. And then there's definitely issues around attachment. I know it does. I know attachment comes up in every episode I do, I think, but for good reason, right? The attachment styles, insecure attachment, right? Anxious attachment, avoidant. I'll link to those episodes. I've done many on attachment, and actually I think it'll drop right after this one. I'm doing like a 3-part series on different attachment styles with each other, like anxious with avoidant and avoid, you know, that kind of stuff. So get ready. But yeah, attachment works here too. You know, if you're bonded to someone, your brain prioritizes preserving the bond. So minimizing problems can feel safer than separating from the person, right? I mean, hopefully that makes sense to you. And I don't want to forget about good old, you know, fashioned social conditioning, especially for women. Again, this can be an issue for men too, of course. But many people, again, I think especially women, are taught to be accommodating, understanding, and not to be, you know, too much. Don't be too much. And that makes it easy to turn your frustration inward instead of treating it, again, as data. Notice how I keep using that word, treating it as information, as data, as evidence. Like, treat stuff that way instead of as non-judgmentally as you can, just like noticing, yeah, oh, this person's really controlling and that doesn't work for me for these reasons. Some people like being with controlling people. They don't want to think about stuff. They want someone to handle it. My wonderful Gary gets very controlling when we're traveling. He's suddenly like, he likes to keep he'll download our plane tickets. Obviously, he'll give me my boarding pass if I ask, you know, but he likes to like coordinate everything and get everything together. But I don't know. And in the airport, he figures out I don't even think about it. I'm like, oh, what gate are we at? I don't even know anymore. When I travel alone now, I'm like, I got to pay attention. There's just times so sometimes I like it, you know, other times he's controlling. When I'm driving, I do not enjoy it. And I let him know, you know, this is all part and parcel, okay, to understanding who people are and then deciding, is this somewhere that I fit? You know how I've talked to you a lot about after you break up, if you break up and you think about the person and you're like, oh, I miss them or whatever, I tell you to make the why not list. And the why not list is why you're not a good fit. It's not why you hate that person. It's not why you don't, they're a terrible human or whatever, or everything that was wrong and blah, blah. It is a list of how you didn't fit. Oh, I like a lot of freedom. And the other person liked to be very controlling. That it wasn't a good fit. I'm really social and like to go out a lot. They like to stay home a lot and watch TV. Not a good fit. Do you know what I mean? So it's not judging what they're doing or how they act. It's just saying it's not a good fit. Are you picking up what I'm laying down? Okay. So let's come back to self-gaslighting. Over time, self-gaslighting erodes your self-trust. You stop asking whether something is okay for you and start asking why you can't just be okay with it. Do you see the difference? It's a problem. All right. So let's talk about I want to talk about biology. So there's a biology of staying versus leaving. And I think this is where a lot of people mistake fear for intuition. So stay with me. Your brain is wired to avoid loss, to avoid uncertainty, avoid threat. And leaving a relationship activates all three of that, all of that, right? It activates all of that right away. Loss aversion means your brain reacts more strongly to what you might lose than what you might gain. So leaving can feel like losing, you know, losing safety, your identity, routine, belonging, even if the relationship is unhealthy. So your nervous system gets really ignited. You know, your nervous system prefers familiarity, always does. So familiar pain feels safer than unfamiliar uncertainty. I'm going to say it again. Familiar pain, because your brain loves familiarity, feels safer than unfamiliar uncertainty. Our brains hate uncertainty. And I've talked about this a lot in previous episodes. And I, as always, will link to all the research. You know, of course, I still always link to the research and all that. And previous episodes where I talk about this under the video, if you're watching on YouTube, and over on the website, abbymetcalf.com, find the episode, you'll find the blog, you'll find all the research, all the, and anything I talk about that you should can download or anything else are always in those two places. But that this is why staying can feel calmer than leaving, right? I know, even when staying is hurting you, right? And what else? Oh, well, another biological issue that I want to talk about is that intermittent reinforcement strengthens attachment. I'll say that again, and I'll explain it. Intermittent reinforcement, so reinforcement that's not all the time, right? That happens occasionally, strengthens attachment. When connection and affection show up unpredictably, you don't know, right? Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not. The good times, the bad times, right? Dopamine is released in bursts, which intensifies bonding. And that's why relationships that are like sometimes great and sometimes painful are so hard to leave, because you are having the strongest kind of reinforcement known to people. Okay. Again, I'll link to all the research on this, but that's a problem. And actually, I'm going to say something, I was going to end there, but chronic relational stress also releases or increases, I should say, cortisol, which is a stress-inducing hormone, which impairs your reflective thinking. It impairs your ability to reflectively think, to be in that space. So it keeps you in survival mode. So when you're stressed, you're less able to make long-term values-based decisions. All that's going on. Biology explains why I'm telling you this, your pull to stay, but you need to remember that it doesn't determine what's best for you. Okay. That's not what your biology is doing. All right. So let's talk about how to assess this relationship without a pros and cons list. And because I'm going to tell you, many people try to decide whether to stay or leave by making a pro and cons list. And I hate this. I don't recommend it, not because lists are useless, you know, but because of how your brain uses this kind of list. If I asked you to write up a list with the pros and the cons of your relationship, you might write 40 pros. You might have so many pros and two cons, two things you don't like. Because the pros list looks so long, your brain starts minimizing the cons. This is happening whether you like it or not. You tell yourself, oh, there's only two issues. You point to that long list of positives as kind of proof that the relationship must be worth staying for. I should probably stay here. But even if one of those cons is a deal breaker, the math doesn't matter. The 40 doesn't matter, or the two doesn't matter. It just, if one of them is, maybe the deal breaker is that he or she hits you. Maybe that's what's on the con list. I don't care what's on the pro list at that point. But your brain, and this is why a lot of people stay in abusive relationships, you think of, oh, but there's this and this and this and this, and then you start to minimize the bad thing. A relationship doesn't work like a vote. 40 good things don't cancel out two things that make you feel unsafe or disrespected, chronically lonely, or like you're losing yourself. The pros list ends up talking you into some. Oh, that was very New York. Did you hear my talking? My talking you into the pros list. What was I saying? Ends up talking you into something, while your brain is sort of explaining away the information that you should be listening to, the data points, the evidence you should be listening to. So instead of listing, I want you to assess. That's what I want. And again, so let me tell you, so this week's download is going to be something I'm calling the Relationship Clarity Worksheet. And it's going to walk you through the exact process step by step. So I don't want you to try to do this all in your head and accidentally self-gaslight yourself back into confusion. So that so it's the process I'm about to walk you through. So you don't have to download it if you want to just listen or whatever, but I make it all nice and pretty for you. And you can come download that again below the video or over on the website at here. But I'm going to give you the process, and it's a four-step process for getting clarity. Remember, we're assessing. Okay, we're assessing. And to make this sort of really concrete, I'm going to use a client example. And I'm going to obviously change her name and some of the details just to completely protect her anonymity. And I did tell her, by the way, people ask me sometimes, do your clients know when you're going to talk about them? I'm like, yes, they do. I unless it's a really old client I don't see anymore. And then again, I always change some things. And it's funny, it happens every time, and it'll happen this time. I'll have clients say, were you talking about me? And I'm not. It's just that so many people have the same problems that it sounds like you a lot. That's why a lot of what I tell you, you're like, oh, I relate to that. Yeah, it's the same, hello, you know, same people I see in my practice. So I'm going to protect her anonymity, and we're going to call her Maya, because I'm liking that name today. So, and I'm going to walk you through the process with Maya, okay, and what we did together. So Maya's been with her partner, let's say, for 3 years, and her pros list was very long and convincing. She kept creating that before she came into therapy, and so she had it like at the ready. And on paper, yeah, he was funny, smart. He loved her family. They traveled well together. He had a good job. Yeah, again, on paper, it looked great. And in so many ways, it was. I don't want anyone here to discount good things in your relationship. This isn't about that. This is about, it's really not. I promise. I'm not like, this isn't like some psychological trick. This is instead having you look more realistically at your relationship and how it works for you. Not the list and all your friends going, oh my God, he or she is so great. What's wrong with you? It doesn't matter what they think. I don't care how much your family loves her. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work for you, right? So, but let's go back to Maya. So there were everything, all these good things, but there were two things that she could not shake. I got to tell you, she just couldn't shake these things. Number one was that during conflict, he became really sarcastic and dismissive. And when things were hard, she always felt like she was on her own. And there was a lot of blame. He would like blame her, things like that. It wasn't good. And now, you know, when you're two single people, it's much easier to downplay this stuff or to overlook. But they were, the reason she was starting to think about all this is because he was starting to talk about getting engaged. And, you know, it's been 3 years. We're now in our late 20s. It's time, you know, we get married. You know, what's the future going to be? And so she had a funny feeling, many funny feelings for a while. And then when he started talking about marriage, she started to get a little panicked and hence came into therapy. So she started seeing a future with marriage, you know, kids, they talk about kids. So as a long-term thing, his stuff mattered a lot. And I said two things. I put them together kind of. It was really her feeling like what happened over and over is that when there was conflict, she felt like he didn't have her back and he would blame her when there was like something going wrong. And then again, he would get sarcastic and dismissive at other times. So it wasn't always when things were going wrong, but those were the two main, she just was like, eh. So I took Maya through the steps. All right. So step one, here we go, is identify your top 3 to 5 relationship non-negotiables. This step is not about what you want your partner to do differently. This is, again, kind of the why not list. All right. It's about what you need in order to feel emotionally safe, to feel respected, to feel like you're in a solid relationship. And she initially said she needed respect, teamwork, and I think emotional safety was the other one. But I was like, okay, what does that mean? You know, you should make those things specific. How do you know if you're respected, right? How do you know when those things are there? So respect meant no sarcasm or mocking during conflict. teamwork meant that when something was hard, he leaned in with her instead of pulling away. Emotional safety meant she could bring up an issue without being punished for it or without it, him bringing it up later, right? And like, you know, throwing it back in her face. So if you're doing this for yourself, ask what must be true for you to feel good in a relationship, and good meaning safe and okay in a relationship. And the hardest part here is to try not to think of your current relationship, because what will happen is you'll think of something that you're non-negotiable and go, oh, but they're not doing that, so I'm not going to include that. So you really have to be in a good place. It's really nice to do this after you've meditated or just had a loving compassion sort of, you know, I have a loving kindness meditation. Maybe listen to that. So you're feeling really compassionate towards your partner, not in an angry place, not in a rejected place. And make your list, but make sure these are your top things that are non-negotiables. So step two is you're going to rate the consistency, not potential. Most people rate the relationship based on potential. They treat the best version of their partner as the standard. And that's not the standard. The standard is consistency, right? What are they doing most of the time? So with Maya, we looked at how often her non-negotiables showed up, especially under stress. And respect was present for sure when things were calm, but disappeared completely during conflict. Again, teamwork showed up when problems were small, but seemed to vanish when she needed a different kind of support. And patterns matter more than promises, okay? So you really have to start seeing the consistency of something. Step three is you need to name what you cannot tolerate. You have to be clear about what's not tolerable. There are things that are hard but workable and things that are fundamentally unsafe, okay? So for Maya, sarcasm and mocking during conflict weren't just communication issues, okay? They were emotionally aggressive to her. And once she named that clearly, she stopped minimizing it, which I thought was really important. That was huge. That was a big day for us. And again, this step isn't about building a case against your partner. It's about your bottom line. If something repeatedly crosses your line of safety or respect, the pros list becomes irrelevant. Do you see it? So you have to do that. Again, like being hit or something could be like done, you know, done. For me, any sort of verbal, like calling me a bitch or the C word or anything like that, would not be tolerated. Telling me, I don't know, calling me fat or ugly or whatever. Anything that was pejorative in any way like that, I'd literally be packing my I've never allowed it. I've never allowed it in my life. I've had it happen and I've been whatever reason, that's something I always felt very clear about. To me, it's violent. It's hitting. It's the person is letting you know I'm out of control. I don't have enough control. And it's not okay to have as an excuse, well, I got so angry that I did that. I've never gotten so angry that I called my partner a name. I've never gotten so angry that I struck someone, that I hit my partner or my children. You know, it's losing control, people. It's an adult temper tantrum. And it's a sign of really low emotional intelligence. And I am saying that you can hate me, you can write hate words under the video, you can do whatever you want. But if you're that upset about it, it might be something to look at. Okay. If I'm saying these words right now and you're like, that's bullshit. No, it's not. Blah, blah, blah. You might take, this is someone with 40 years of experience with so many degrees. It's ridiculous. I am telling you, it's not okay ever. Okay. Ever. It is always a sign of that. On some level, all right? Just get real about it. So I'm not saying can't get angry. Angry's good. Anger's good. Anger's a healthy emotion. I am saying when it spills over into that helpless rage and you are doing things that are against your, again, here's that cognitive dissonance again, doing things that are against your ethics. If that's not against your ethics, to call someone out of their name and to hit them, then I question your ethics. So I do. So there you go. I'm judging. I know I'm not supposed to, but I am. I have some lines in the sand. Those are them for me. You have to decide in your relationship what it is for you. But nothing like that was nothing that extreme was happening with Maya, I do want to say. step four is ask the long-term question. Okay. So once Maya, like, you know, saw the patterns clearly, we were, you know, again, this is happening over some time with us, right? That we got to the place where we started to do the steps. Once she saw the patterns clearly, she still wanted certainty. Most people do. I get it. So what you can answer is this. This is usually the one. If nothing changed, because that's what you have to assume. If this is the best the relationship is ever going to be, this is the best, this is the highest point. Could you live in this relationship long-term without betraying yourself? You might be able to, now that other part is important, without betraying yourself. You don't ask yourself, if it never gets better, could I stay in this relationship? I'm sure you could. But could you stay in it without betraying yourself? That's your question. That's the one you get to. For Maya, the answer came very quickly for her. She knew. She's like, I'm already becoming smaller and quieter. It's already starting. I can feel it. That's what's making me uncomfortable. It was already happening. And I will tell you, when my clients have a kind of a epiphany moment, an aha moment, clarity often sounds really calm. I have to tell you, clarity is often like a big exhale. It's usually not dramatic at all. When it shows up, your job is not to argue with it. Your job is to respect it. And it showed right up for her. And then she started to, like, you know, backtrack a little. And I was like, stop. You know, you're here. So just take a breath with it and sit with it. Now, so that's that four-step process. Again, download the worksheet. And I also have a Therapy to Go bundle that's amazing for this. If this is an issue for you, if everything I'm saying is like, oh my God, this is hitting so hard, I have a Therapy to Go bundle that where you can do some deeper work on all of this besides the download, the free download. Okay. So I'll talk about that again at the end. But let me say now that if you have kids together, let me just give a little thing here. Having children doesn't change the core question of whether a relationship is workable. It changes the responsibility. It changes the pacing, but not the truth. Again, I'm pausing for effect. Are you hearing? This is where a lot of my clients, a lot of people I talk to get stuck. Parents often tell themselves they should stay for the kids, that any two-parent household is better than divorce, or that as long as they don't fight in front of their kids, everything is fine. And that's usually self-gaslighting in disguise. That's what I find. Kids don't just absorb what you say. They absorb emotional tone, chronic tension, resentment, withdrawal, and the way you and your partner handle conflict and repair. Yeah, a home can be quiet and still feel really unsafe. A relationship can look stable from the outside and still teach unhealthy lessons about love, about self-respect, and emotional availability. And you're going to have to get clear on this. Remember the 40 versus 11 million bits I always talk about? How your brain, your conscious brain processes 40 bits per second of information a second, but your subconscious processes 11 million. So does your kids. They know. I talk to kids. I'm telling you, they know. I talk to them as adults a lot. And they talk about, I wish if I had a penny for every time I've heard someone say, I wish my parents had gotten divorced. It was horrible, the tension in the house. And these are people that grow up with a very anxious nervous system. They grow up with insecure attachment. You think you're creating secure attachment by staying in the relationship. You're not. So you might have other reasons for staying, might be financial or other. I'm not saying you need to go. Again, remember, this is for assessment today. I am saying don't say you need to stay for the kids. That's what I'm saying. Because we got no research that shows that that helps your children at all, at all. When you have kids, the question isn't, can I tolerate this? It's, what am I modeling? That's the question. What am I modeling? Would I want my kids to be in this relationship? You're modeling what partnership looks like. You're modeling how people treat each other under stress. You're modeling whether love requires self-silencing, walking on eggshells, enduring unhappiness. again, that's what you're doing. And I'm not saying this to make you feel guilty if you're choosing to stay. I'm telling you this so that you understand, so that you can talk to, if you stay, if you do all this, you assess and you realize it's a really unhealthy relationship, but you decide to stay, which to me is a different thing. It really is. I'd rather you at least had a correct assessment and then decided. You just have to understand, oh, well, this is harming my kids in a way. So I need to think about that. You know, it's helping your kids in a way too. They don't have to go between two households. They don't have to, you know, there's help there too. I get it. You know, there's more money maybe, things like that. You can take care of them better. Sure. Just understand this other thing is going on. So mitigate that. Talk to them about it. Maybe not obviously when they're really young. I would talk to a professional about how to talk to them about it. I'm not going to get into that all here, but at least be real so that you're not gaslighting them, right? Because trust me, then they're going to do the same thing later. There's an important distinction to make here. Working through discomfort in a relationship that is basically respectful and emotionally safe is really healthy, I think, for kids to witness. But normalizing chronic unhappiness, emotional distance, contempt, repeated boundary violations isn't. It is not. It doesn't protect your children. It instructs them. I'm going to say that again. You're not protecting your children. You're instructing them. You're teaching them. So again, keep it in mind. Again, don't feel guilty if you choose to stay. Do something about it. Know that this is something I'm instructing my children about, that I don't want to gaslight them. I want to help them understand as they grow old enough to do that. Again, please get professional help around this stuff. Please talk to a professional about how to talk to your kids. Someone who specializes in that. I don't know. Leave a message below, a comment somewhere if you, or send me an email if you really want. I try to stay away from the direct parenting stuff because so many people do it. I am a parent. I know I'm a divorced parent, even my kid's dad. And, so I get it all. Like I do, you know, and there's really healthy ways to go through it. This podcast is not about my life and what I do so that you can do it too. I put in a lot of my own stuff often to let you know because I practice what I preach. But what I preach are evidence-based approaches that have worked with my clients for years, and clients from all kinds of different backgrounds that I also do. But I am your guide, not your guru here, right? I never want to be your guru. I'm not trying to be Dr. Phil. I am trying to be your guide through this. I'm not going to write a book about my personal him and Robin or what. I don't even think they're married anymore. But anyway, like that's not my gig. My gig is different. So, and if you like that, go listen to him. But if you want evidence-based approaches, listen to me. And yeah, I'll throw in my own stuff, but I really try not to make this the Abby show all the time. Sometimes if I think it's helpful, I put it in. Other times I don't. And the parenting stuff I put in with some regularity, but not a ton of it, because what worked for me and my kids and their temperament and our situation and our, you know, from our finances to where we live to all the things is different for everybody. There is no cookie cutter. But again, I would be happy to share if those are things that people would like. We do share that kind of stuff in the One Love Collective on Substack. I get much more personal about things there. Makes more sense. But anyway, so again, staying doesn't automatically protect kids, and leaving doesn't automatically harm kids. What protects kids, children, is having caregivers who are emotionally regulated, who are honest with themselves, and capable of modeling respect, repair, self-trust. And sometimes that happens together. Sometimes it happens apart. But that's what it is. Again, this doesn't mean you rush a decision or ignore the impact on your kids. Either way, it doesn't mean either. It means you stop pretending that staying in a relationship that requires ongoing self-abandonment is a neutral choice, because it isn't. It teaches something, whether you intend it to or not. That's what I'm trying to say. Again, please don't walk away. You know that I never, ever am going to say anything with the intention of having you feel guilty or angry at yourself. It's always with the intention. So if you're taking it that way, stop, because that's not it. It's always with the intention of having you wake up out of some daydream, of having you think differently. Like, oh, I hadn't thought of it that way. It doesn't mean I'm 100% right for you. It means that you want to listen like you're wrong and then see what fits and what doesn't. That's what it means. So, and I'll wrap it up here. You know, at some point, the work isn't about figuring out whether you should stay or leave. It's about stopping the internal arguments that keep you stuck. And when you're honest about what you need and whether it's actually happening, the decision tends to make itself. You might not like it right away, but you'll recognize it. That's the moment you stop really talking yourself out of your own experience and start trusting it again. And that's really what I want. So again, download the Relationship Clarity Worksheet. That's for free. If you want help doing this without spiraling, okay, it'll help walk you through identifying, you know, your non-negotiables, rating your consistency, naming non-tolerables, answering the long-term question in a grounded way, all that, right? That's all free, okay? Then if you want to go deeper, you can get my Therapy to Go bundle, which I'm going to tell you about right now. If you're done and you don't want to hear about the bundle, have a fabulous week. If you'd like to hear about it, so my One Love Collective on Substack is $8 a month, and they get all the Therapy to Go bundles included. Everyone. they get the free download, obviously, right to them, and they get the Therapy to Go bundle. Which includes the free download, by the way. So you don't have to get the download and then the bundle if you're getting the bundle. And the bundle, though, if you want to buy it and not join the One Love Collective, is $10 per bundle. Like anytime you buy it, it's $10. So if you'd like to do that, it's really great to bring to your therapist. If you have a therapist, you know, do the work with them, would be incredible. Again, if this is hitting for you. So what's in the bundle? But if you're in the One Love Collective, you get it included along with ad-free podcasts, a live Q&As with me twice a month, which are amazing. We do them on Zoom. You get a really supportive community. We're in there. I'm in there every day pretty much, chatting, doing our thing. You get everything. Anyway, so the bundle has a self-gaslighting inventory to help you with that. I have journaling prompts to help you really uncover the self-gaslighting beliefs you probably have. The third thing, is this hard or is this harmful worksheet, right? Kind of distinguishing if something's just hard or if it's actually harmful for you. There's a values-based closure letter. It's a letter that's not meant to send, but I walk you through the steps of kind of what that is. I think people have found, you know, all these things I always use with my clients first, and then I sort of put them together in a bundle and I change some things usually or add some things to create this. So I've done this letter many times with my clients. It's really helpful. And I have another worksheet. Lastly, there's another worksheet about the biology of staying versus leaving, just to really help you get through what's happening biologically. So all of that is everything in the Therapy to Go bundle. Again, you can get them below the video if you're watching on YouTube or over on my website. And that's it for this week. I really put my heart and soul in this. I put them in everyone, I think, but I'm hoping you really got a lot out of this one. If there was questions you were asking, I will link to Is This Relationship Worth Saving, which is a different, that's a very different thing I did a long time ago, years ago, but we'll link to that in all the notes and all the places. And I love you. I'm sorry you're going through this if you're listening. If you're listening, you're probably going through some things, and I'm sorry. I know how hard this is. It's heartbreaking to me to watch people be in pain as they're trying to make these really difficult, complex decisions. And I try to make things as simple as possible, but I understand it's complex for you and there's a lot going on. All right. Have an amazing week, a wonderful week, a thoughtful, self-realizing week. That's what I wish for you. All right. Love you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.